everybody. Good day. It's January 15, 2013, and it's time for It's All About Food. And I'm your host, Karen Hartglass. Thanks for joining me. And it's been a big progressive radio network day for me, and maybe for you too. But this morning I had the wonderful opportunity to be on another progressive radio network show, The Natural Nurse. And we're doing a bunch of cross-promotion, cross-pollination here so that you can learn about the other programs that are on this network. And I'm enjoying it because I'm learning too. And there's just so many wonderful programs. And we're just going to keep doing that. So I've got another progressive radio network guest that I'm really looking forward to talking to today. And the two of us have been talking about doing this for too long, and now it's finally going to happen. So let's proceed. My next guest is Bhavani Jaroff, and she has over 30 years' experience as a natural food chef. Her career began while a student at NYS College of Ceramics at Alfred University. At the time, there was not a vegetarian meal plan on campus, so she designed and implemented a vegetarian meal plan for the university. As part of her work-study program, she cooked for 75 vegetarians daily, and within the first semester, the program had expanded to over 125 students. And after college, she worked in many natural food restaurants in both New York City and Boston. Recognizing the need for alternative to standard catering, she founded Morningstar Catering, a full-service natural foods catering company, which she ran for 12 years before choosing to be a stay-at-home mom and raising her three children as vegetarians. Okay, so let's bring on Bhavani. Welcome, finally.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now, the one thing that I didn't mention in here is I eat green, because you're going to tell us about that.
Okay. Well, after retiring from Morningstar Catering and staying at home with my kids, after many years, I actually went back to school and became a Waldorf teacher before I started I Eat Green. Mm-hmm. Waldorf education is based on the philosophy of Rudolf Steiner. And one of the philosophies of Rudolf Steiner is how important your food is. And the food meal plan at the Waldorf School in Garden City, where my children went, was not representative of that. So I proposed changing the cafeteria program to be a healthy alternative program, and after much back and forth, it was finally accepted, and I took over the cafeteria at the Waldorf School and brought the educational aspects of Rudolf Steiner in line with the cafeteria program, and so we served almost all organic, at least natural foods. You know, the chicken, I don't think was organic, but it was hormone antibiotic free.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to highlight different seasonal vegetables. We started a composting program at the school. And then I also incorporated community service throughout the high school so that all the students got to rotate through the cafeteria cooking for the homeless and then going out onto the streets of Manhattan and serving them.
Wow.
So
that's really ambitious.
Yeah, it was a great program, and it's still going on today, although I don't think the community service aspect of it is. But when I left the Waldorf School, because my kids kind of outgrew the school at the time, I started I Eat Green. And I Eat Green is really a conglomeration of all the different passions that I have, from gardening and growing food to cooking healthy food and sharing my passion with people and trying to motivate people to make better choices with their fork, both for their own bodies and for the planet. And I know that's all about what you're doing as well.
That's right. Amen to all of that. And
yes,
thank you for doing that, because we need more people doing it, and we need more people doing it and putting their own spin on it, because we don't all relate the same way to people.
Right.
People need to hear this message in many different ways, packaged in many different ways from different people. Some people are audio, some people are visual, and they relate to different cultures, and we just need more people doing this.
Absolutely. And, you know, and my vegetarian path has changed so much from when I was 16 and I first read Die for a Small Planet.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Which inspired me. The reason behind becoming a vegetarian at that time was because of the myth that we didn't have enough food, and I was now aware that we did have enough food. We were just feeding it to animals instead of to people. We were growing the wrong food for people. And
right.
So that was the impetus behind my becoming a vegetarian. And then over the years, I started doing it more also from a health point of view. At first, I went on the white diet. I was 16. What did I know? I just cut meat out and ate everything else that I regularly ate. So it was white pasta, bagels, bread. You know, I really didn't know so much about eating healthy. And then when I had children and I was now going to be, actually it started even before that, but when you really become responsible for the health of another being, you really have to take it on a very different level.
You know, I agree with you, but unfortunately, whether parents think that way or not, a lot of them are not doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're not, and, you know, you just see it by all of the...
They're letting their kids rule very often, the kids who are influenced by marketing and their environment, and the parents are tired and weary and overwhelmed and want to have a nice relationship with their kids.
And they give in.
They don't want to fight about food, so chicken nuggets.
Absolutely.
Coke, bring it
absolutely.
On.
I remember being in a supermarket when my daughter was young, and my last one was definitely prone to temper tantrums.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be in the supermarket, and she'd be asking for something that I was not going to give her, and she would have a full-fledged temper tantrum in the middle of the supermarket.
Mm.
And I remember walking out, leaving my wagon, just walking out of the store because there was, you know, I wasn't going to give her what she wanted, and people were looking at me like I was a terrible mother.
Yeah.
Just give her what she wants already. And there was no way I was going to do that.
No, so. Good for you. And I'm sure it's paid off.
It has. It has. My kids all eat well. Even my son is no longer a vegetarian. However, he you know, does not eat fast food and is very aware of the meat that he does put in his body and also enjoys a lot of vegetarian food. And I think that's one thing that I've come to realize is, as you were saying before, how everything's packaged differently and people can hear it in different ways. Because I want to help convert people to eating healthier and also healthier for the planet, I guess I've become more lenient or flexible in meeting people where they're starting,
mm-hmm.
where they are to start with. And if you have someone who's eating meat all the time, thinking that they're going to become vegan or vegetarian right away is just not going to happen. So you have to do it gradually. You know, I'm a private chef now, and I have a client that I've been with for 4 years, and just in the last few months, they've asked me to do one meal a week vegan.
Mm.
And I'm so happy about that.
Yep.
And I'm talking to them, you know, slowly and saying, just let me know when you're ready to go to two meals a week. But, you know, they were meat and potato people before I started working with them.
Well,
and
it's somewhat mind-boggling how brainwashed we all are about what we're supposed to be eating and how so many people are literally afraid to make changes.
Yeah.
They're afraid. So you do have to step carefully, open the door, let them try one or two things, let them know they're not going to die or feel bad.
Right, but also to not be judgmental. That's been the hard, you know, something that I've really worked on over the years, because it's hard to not be judgmental sometimes.
It is.
When we, you know, firmly believe in what we believe in, and we believe it's better for so many reasons, not just for our own health, but look at our society and look at the earth and the planet and climate change and what industrial agriculture and raising animals in this unsustainable way is doing to our planet. So from so many aspects, it's infuriating sometimes to, you know, to have people that just don't get it. And it's hard to stay patient and be understanding and compassionate with meeting them where they are.
Absolutely.
And try to win them over.
Well, you know, people have to understand, I have to just say this, I totally agree with you, but the challenge for many of us is acknowledging what is going on in the world today, and it's pretty horrific. So we're looking at three major things that are just out of control, and that is the way we raise animals for food, and what's happening with our health, and what's happening to the environment.
Right.
And I say this all the time, factory farming has to end. And there's a tremendous cost for all of us with our food and being unhealthy. And I have the answers. A lot of us have the answers. And you want to just shake people and say, you don't have to suffer.
Right.
But they don't want the information. And so you're right. We have to be loving and non-judgmental and compassionate and step lightly, be patient, and keep breathing.
Right, right. Keep breathing and, like you said, slowly win them over, you know. And the way that I have come to do it is just by presenting really good tasting food. I have been around so many vegetarians over the years, and I've been asked to, like, judge potlucks, you know, where there's a big vegan feast. And I have to tell you, there's so much bad cooking out there
mm-hmm.
that it's enough to turn anybody off. And it's really crucial that people have the opportunity to taste really full-flavored, delicious, rich vegan food. Because if everything tastes like it was just picked out of the garden and, well, actually, delicious, that's delicious. I don't mean to put that down because there's nothing better than fresh picked out of the garden salad. But what I mean is that the food has to be really flavorful and beautifully presented and crafted with a consciousness and artistic quality so that it is enticing and appealing. Because we eat with our eyes as well as with our taste buds. And if it doesn't look pretty, and I know this, having raised children as vegetarians, that you have all their friends coming over, and if you don't make something that looks appealing and looks familiar to them, kids aren't even going to try it. So
I'm feeling like I'm hearing myself talking here.
Uh-huh. Right. So, you know, one of the first things, you know, to introduce kids to tofu, I would make tofu parmesan. You know, and you can use rice cheese instead of regular cheese, or if you're okay with cheese, you can use some organic mozzarella cheese. But basically, you know, making the cutlets with, you know, some organic whole grain breadcrumbs that you make and frying it just like you would, you know, a chicken cutlet or an eggplant parmesan. And it's delicious. And you put tomato sauce on it, and the kids love it.
You know, it's crazy sometimes. Over the holidays, one of our relatives was really being thoughtful and said, I want to make you something vegan for the family dinner. And she thought she'd make a vegan lasagna. She never made one before. She was panicking for a week about it and then served it. And she was surprised at how good it was. And it's tomato sauce. And it's pasta, all the things people are used to eating. It's not that different.
Right. Right. But actually, vegan lasagna is one of the things that I judged as being the best thing at this vegan potluck, and it still was not very good.
Yeah.
So actually, last week I shared a vegan pesto lasagna for anybody who wants a really great recipe. You know, you need the creaminess. You need to substitute that ricotta cheese that is in a lasagna in order to really have it feel full-flavored. If you just do the lasagna noodles and the tomato sauce, it kind of dries out and it doesn't have that creaminess
mm-hmm.
that people are looking for in a lasagna. So I make a pesto without any cheese, and I mix some tofu in there and a little soy milk or rice milk or almond milk, and you end up with a creamy, luscious green pesto tofu mixture that is excellent. And then, you know, put in some vegetables, and it is just a great recipe. So
Anything with pesto. Just give me anything with pesto. I'll
right,
eat it.
That's true. I agree.
So we met just last week, even though we've had some... Oh, no, I think we met in the studio once or
twice.
We did.
Uh-huh.
But we were at this event last week for the book that just came out, Foodology by Winona Howder.
Right.
And you had her on her show already.
Right, Foodopoly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I thought we just might talk a little bit about some of the topics that were brought up in the book. It moved me quite a bit. It depressed me quite a bit.
I know. You know, the issues are so big, and they can be so overwhelming. It's hard.
Because you and I have very similar approaches. We want to change the world by putting healthy, delicious food in people's mouths. And I think it's a pretty good strategy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the messages I got in the book was that one person at a time concept isn't enough. And we need to be writing our legislators and letting our government know what we want in order to make change, because there's this big, powerful force that of corporations, just a handful of them, that are totally in control of our food supply, and it's really frightening.
It's very frightening. It's so discouraging for me as well when I've, you know, been on this path for so long, and products that I've used for so long that I've thought of as, you know, someone like me starting up this startup company and becoming successful and then selling out to a big corporation. And, you know, you can understand, you know, everybody wants to be financially successful and you know, be able to move on. But then these parent companies take over, and they push to change the ingredients. They push to weaken the organic standards. They add sugar where they don't need sugar. They add carrageenan where they don't need carrageenan. They, like, just add different things, and they change the product. And then they also push and promote the goals of the parent company, which in this case, you know, we're just coming off of the Proposition 37 in California, where so many of these organizations or companies put money into defeating Proposition 37, which is our right to know for labeling GMOs. And, you know, that's what's going on all over. You know, there's very few.
Every time, when I was reading the book, and I was familiar with all the things that had happened over time that she was mentioning, and what's great about this book is it puts it all in one place, the history of how we got to where we are today. But I kept wondering to myself, maybe I'm just too naive or innocent, but I couldn't believe that people, individuals, would really promote these things that are so bad for us or be a part of that. But I guess money and power are really, oh.
Yeah, well, you know, years ago I saw the movie Future of Food, and in there there was a court set up in Europe where they were actually asking the people from Monsanto, when the European Union was not allowing GMOs into their country, they were saying to the executives at Monsanto, well, why don't you eat the GMOs for a year and you be the experiment, and then we'll let us know how it goes. And they were refusing. You know, they were not going to eat the GMO products.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder, don't they have children and grandchildren? Don't they care? But like you said, money rules. And I remember when I was first pregnant with my oldest daughter, there was the big lawsuit amongst the beech nut executives. Do you remember that? Where they had been promoting artificially colored sugar water as apple juice in baby bottles.
Yeah. Oh, why not?
Do you believe that? And they, you know, they went to jail. But you know, it was one of the first white collar crimes that I remember. But, you know, it always gets me when people are like, well, you can't just trust anything coming out of China. And it's like, hello, beech nut was right here. You can't trust anybody when it has to do with the money. You know, they just don't have any integrity.
I think Winona had talked about a few examples that had happened much earlier like that in her book. And laws had come along so that you couldn't do that, and beech nut still did it anyway.
Right. Right. Well, the one thing that she does talk about are all the antitrust laws that were weakened under Reagan and the conglomerations that have been taking place. And there's, you know, there used to be laws to prevent that so that we had some choice, you know. And now we don't have choice not only in our food system but in our health care system. You know, all the insurance companies are becoming conglomerates. All the hospitals are becoming conglomerates. You know, your local community hospital is now owned by a big hospital. I mean, pharmaceutical companies are all merging. All these merges that are happening with the weakening of the antitrust laws and, you know, and allowing, you know, corporations to become so powerful. And then, of course, with the courts ruling that corporations have, you know, can be considered you know, people in mm-hmm. their rights to voting and to giving donations to political parties, it's just become, you know, a ridiculous situation. And so you're right. What Winona was saying is we really all have to now become political activists. We can no longer just, you know, make these decisions, you know, make good decisions with purchasing good products, but we really have to stand up and get out there and protest and sign petitions
and write letters, not just emails, but send paper mail.
Right.
That seems to have a tremendous impact.
Uh-huh. Because we don't have the money that these corporations have, but we do have the numbers and people. And so
I want to believe that we can make a difference with individuals. And it's really easy to get frustrated and think that thing that I can do. Sometimes I'm a little fearful that the only thing that will work is if we all just stop everything, stop buying, just everybody stop, let the whole machine come to a complete halt and say, we are not participating anymore until we are heard.
Right. Well, that's what, you know, the 99% movement was trying to do and is still trying to do. I mean, you know, it's a great movement. It's brought awareness in a big way that didn't exist before the
mm-hmm.
protests. To the 99% and to the 1% corporate ruling that is just out of proportion. And
well, I definitely agree that all of that's important, but I still believe myself that if you and I can change a lot of people's eating habits, things will change significantly.
Mm-hmm. There's a great article today, by the way. Did you see it in the health section or the Science Times
No.
in the New York Times about transitioning to become a vegan? It was great.
Oh.
And it was really just saying, you know, don't do it overnight. It's not going to happen overnight, cold turkey.
Mm-hmm.
That you need to be patient with yourself and go slowly and develop your taste so that if you're, you know, craving a burger, don't expect a vegan burger to taste like a hamburger. It's going to taste different, and it's going to be delicious, and it can satisfy that craving, but it's going to be different. And you have
to... I'm going to need to read that article.
It's really,
really
great.
Awesome.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's really great, and it's so doable, you know, in little bites. You know, I'm not vegan. I should just say that out on the radio, because
mm-hmm.
people will hear my show, and they know on occasion I eat fish, and on occasion I eat dairy. And, you know, it is something I'm striving towards myself. I do think it's healthier and better, and I'm, you know, working towards it. But I, you know, I still feel that, you know, my food choices are so, so much better than most. And
we don't have any evidence for the ideal diet at this point in time. We have a lot of information that gives us an idea, and basically we know that a diet that's based in plant foods, whole, minimally processed, is the best. But we don't know if we need a little bit of animal products or not. We don't know that. That's not
mm-hmm.
that hasn't been demonstrated.
Well, I know. I started eating it. I was a young mother, and I was, you know, having a child before any of my friends, and I just felt as a vegetarian at that time without knowing a lot,
mm-hmm.
as I know a lot more now. I felt like I needed to have that protein. You know how that's like drilled into us. And so that's when I started eating fish again. And then I kind of just kept doing it. And now, as I've learned more and I know the conditions of the ocean, I know the pesticides, garbage that the fish eat, and I know the pollution in the water. And you know, and fishing is, you know, I used to be able to rationalize it that, you know, well, fish live a natural life till they're caught. You know, they're out in the wild. They're not being raised and suffering. And they, you know, so I was able to rationalize it better. And now the whole farming world has changed. That's no longer the case. Now they're being raised just to be slaughtered, just like the meat. And so if I do eat fish, you know, I'm very mindful as to what fish I eat and that it's wild caught, and it's, you know, but still, like you said, there's lots of issues, and the same with dairy. I mean, I was shocked to know that dairy contributes to the greenhouse gas emissions almost as much as meat production.
That's right.
I was shocked. I thought, you know, that was better. And it's
and
not.
There's also the veal connection, which is directly related to dairy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have milk without a baby calf, which ultimately is slaughtered most of the time. Mm. Yeah, it's not a pleasant.
No,
it's not a pleasant world we live in.
It's not. So you know, again, so if I am choosing to eat dairy, I do try to know that it's being farmed locally, you know, raised locally. Mm. I know the farmer, and you know, just trying to be mindful of that kind of thing, and also just eating a lot less of it. And choose, you know, most of the time I choose not to. And I'm feeling better about it. And I certainly believe that there will be a day where it will be over for me.
Good. Well, I wish you the best with that. And certainly as more people do what you're doing, it'll become easier for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Just one other thing about fish. Just I know that the fish thing, there is lots of different feelings about it. I know that there are some people that call themselves vegan and even on occasion have a small amount of fish. They feel that it's important. There are things out there like DHA supplements from algae, which give us what many people are looking for when they eat fish. And you can get them from plant-based sources. The thing that gets to me mostly, though, what drove me to eating plant foods was I'm not into pain and suffering. And even fish, I have read some amazing stories about how they think and live and care about their families and experience pain. They don't look anything like us, but there's a lot going on down there under the water that we don't comprehend.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll just move to a better place.
Well, the other thing also that started changing my mind about fish is you are told that you want to eat, you know, that fish, you're going to get all these omega-3s, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
However, nowadays, with the farm-raised fish, they're feeding them fish pellets. And the fish pellets, if you really search into what's in fish pellets, they're putting the chicken parts and the slime from the chicken guts into the fish pellets. And fish aren't supposed to eat chicken. So what happens to the nutritional value that you thought you were getting from fish, from getting omega-3s, when they're not eating the plankton that you think they're getting the omega-3s from, but they're now eating chicken parts? All of a sudden, the nutritional value is going to be different.
We have to stand up and not support this and let more people know about it and not make them want to eat what they're eating today. If people stop buying it, we won't have it. That's why I believe in what we're doing more than anything else.
I agree with you. And we really need to help encourage people to pick a subject that they can feel passionate about and to become active. There, like you were saying, there's so many issues. You talked about just three, the environment, the cruelty to animals, and our health. But there's so many more. You know, there's the climate change, and well, I guess that goes under environment. There's the economy, and it goes on and on and on. So if everybody at least picked one area that they are willing to put some energy into, it would be so much better. You know, I'm getting to the age where I know many people that are starting to retire or think about retiring. And when you are retiring, you have so much time and energy that you could promote and put towards these good causes. And most of the people that I know are not doing that. And they're even friends of mine. When I, you know, think about just going to Florida and playing golf, it makes me crazy.
There's a lot of work to do.
It makes me crazy.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, Bhavani, thank you. Where can people hear your show and find your website?
My website is www.ieatgreen.com. And they can email me at Bhavani, which is spelled B-H-A. Excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold. Bhavani at ieatgreen.com.
Bhavani at ieatgreen.com. And that's the letter I, eatgreen.com.
Correct.
Great. And your show on Progressive Radio Network is
Thursday. And Thursday at 10 o'clock, you will be my guest. And I'm so much looking forward to continuing this conversation.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk on Thursday. And
thank you. Thanks for having me.
Feel good.
Thank you
so
much.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with Talia Lutzker talking about the Ayurvedic vegan kitchen, finding harmony through food. Okay, we're back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are on January 15, 2013. And now we're going to bring on my next guest, Talia Lutzker, and talk about her new book, Ayurvedic Vegan Kitchen. She's a certified Ayurvedic practitioner, nutritionist, professional chef, and founder of Talia's Kitchen Catering Company, and the author of two cookbooks. She also teaches yoga, cooking classes, and is a certified Ayurvedic masseuse. Talia's passion for holistic medicine and innovative healthy food sparkles through in her intelligent, warm, fun, and inspiring teaching style. Through cleansing programs, cooking classes, and one-on-one consultations, she helps people learn to love cooking, self-care, and eating well. Welcome to It's All About Food, Talia.
Thank you, Karen.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Well, I was just talking with another woman about everything that it looks like you're about, finding harmony through food. I love it.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Because there's a lot of things, as I was talking about in the last half hour, that are wrong with the world that can be very overwhelming, very frustrating, very depressing, and I'm so glad that there are people out there like yourself that are making it fun and making it tasty and making it balanced. Because that's what Ayurvedic is about, right? Finding balance?
Yes. Yes, finding balance between your particular constitution and the foods that you eat, or even the type of yoga that you do or the type of workouts that you do. You know, just really taking into consideration the uniqueness of yourself and then bringing outside elements that are going to calm that or, you know, bring more serenity to you.
What brought you to Ayurvedic food and study?
Well, you know, I have to tell you before I answer that question directly, I was looking at your website and you were the executive director at EarthSave.
Yep.
And when I was in college, I went to UC Santa Barbara, but then I moved up to Santa Cruz just for a quarter to be an intern at EarthSave. And so I also worked for them.
That wasn't when I was there, probably.
No, not when you were there. But
was that when they were on Frederick Street in Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
Funky little house there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that. And that was, I mean, it's sort of the part of the history of how I came to Ayurveda was I was always really interested in food as a way of healing, not only, you know, on a health, on a personal health realm, but also in a more global way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in my late 20s, I went to become a certified yoga teacher. I had been practicing yoga for about 8 years. And when I was at my yoga teacher training, we were introduced to Ayurveda. It was the first time I'd ever heard of it. But I also got sick at my teacher training. And the nature of my illness was just severe itchiness, and basically a rash broke out kind of all over my body. And I had had some psoriasis when I was younger, like around the age of 12, and then again when I was a teenager, and again when I was in my early 20s, but it was never a huge problem. It was more just sort of a nuisance. And when this rash broke out all over my body, I just kind of knew what Western medicine had to offer, and I didn't want it.
Not much,
especially when it comes to skin,
mm-hmm.
and like sort of an unknown, a mystery cause, caused illness like psoriasis or eczema, according to Western medicine. So I just set out on this journey to find a holistic healthcare practitioner. And I saw many people, but about 3 months into it, I met Deanna Batdorf, who is now my Ayurvedic practitioner, one of my dearest friends, my mentor. She's the person who wrote the foreword to my book. And it was just the Ayurvedic way towards healing made so much sense to me. It was like somebody looking at me with a laser right into the center of my soul and seeing not just the physical issues, but the spiritual and the emotional issues that were also feeding the problem. And Ayurveda has just been the most amazing godsend for me. I just love it. And within about less than 6 months of eating an Ayurvedic diet that was right for my constitution, 85 to 90% of the skin rash was completely gone, never came back again. My hormones were more balanced. My mood was more balanced. I was emotionally more stable. I found my passion, like, you know, for what I wanted to do in the world, which up until then I had not had any contact with.
It's so, all about food.
Yeah, I mean, it really, food was the pathway.
Okay, so here's my question for you. My understanding of Ayurvedic is heavily combined with dairy foods, and yet you've come up with a vegan version, and I love it because I'm all about vegan.
Yes.
I have a lot of concern about dairy foods. So how does that work? How is it that Ayurvedic, which is includes dairy as a food, how is it that it considers that balance, then how can you come along and make it vegan? And how do some people react to that who really believe in the traditional principles? Is that a mouthful?
Well, yeah. You know, I haven't actually run into yet. I haven't run into any Ayurvedic doctors or practitioners who are like, I don't like what you're doing. I don't think this is Ayurveda because you've taken out dairy. The way my approach to this was, you know, Ayurveda looks at every food and herb and living thing as it possesses its own elemental constitution, and it's the energy behind that constitution, meaning, you know, ether, air, fire, water, or earth, that gives it its nutritional properties. I mean, there's also, you know, vitamins and minerals, which are more individual per food. But in a larger scale, from an Ayurvedic standpoint, we're looking at the energetics of food and how the energetic of a food can put somebody more into balance or more into an imbalanced state, depending on the person and depending on the food.
Mm-hmm.
So dairy in general is very sweet. And we really want to think about this as Ayurveda is a 5,000-year-old science originating from India, where the cow is revered as absolutely sacred. And I don't know if you've ever been to India, but
yes.
Like cows stop traffic. I mean, you just you go around the cow. In fact, one time I saw a cow in a restaurant. I was just what? But it was just, it had wandered into the restaurant and nobody was trying to get it out. It was probably a big, kind of an honor that it was in there. But the energetic of dairy, which is predominantly sweet, is going to have a balancing, grounding effect on the constitutions of what we call vata and pitta. Vata is the constitution of air and ether that's very light and dry. So the moistening aspects of dairy are helpful for vata. And pitta is fire and water, which is very hot and oily. And there are aspects of dairy that are cooling, and so really good for the pitta dosha, which basically means element. But what I did was looked at, okay, so we've got this sweet nature from the milk, from the oily nature that goes into butter or ghee, but where else can I find those same qualities in plant-based foods?
Hmm.
Well, I can find the oily cooling quality in coconut oil, so which is also a stable oil when you heat it. So it's on par with butter or ghee in that way of you're not changing, a monounsaturated fat like olive oil into a saturated fat when you cook it, which we really don't want to do. We're using a fat that's already saturated and that is going to have a higher smoke point and therefore be more health-giving in the long term, like coconut oil. So that's the oil that kind of dominates the dominates my book in terms of an oil that I'm using for heating or for making foods hot. And then I was able to find that same sweet grounding quality in nuts like cashews and Brazil nuts and the occasional macadamia nut.
Bless those nuts and
yeah.
all that they can do. They are the best.
Yeah, they're great. And when you soak them and you combine them with some lemon juice and some salt and some miso paste or, all different ingredients that complement them, it really ends up tasting like cheese. And so I even have a couple recipes in here that are
better than cheese.
I mean, it's such a great alternative to people who are lactose intolerant, who don't want to eat dairy for whatever reason, and for vegans. And I just found that while it may not always be a perfect exchange, it's good enough. And it really works. I mean, these recipes really work.
Now, something I noticed, maybe I missed something, but it looks like there's no wheat in this book, or at least the one that had a pasta made an alternative for rice pasta.
Yeah, you didn't miss that. That was a good eye on your part. In my personal Ayurvedic practice, I have so many clients who are not only having issues with dairy, but also with gluten, that it's become another one of my specialties is helping people navigate through a gluten-free diet and a gluten-free lifestyle. So I just felt like it would be really helpful to leave my book predominantly gluten-free. There's really only a few recipes that contain gluten in the form of barley predominantly. And I thought it was also a good marketing point about the book, even though my publisher isn't,
say it on here.
Pointing towards
that.
I know, I think so too,
yeah.
But maybe it'll come out in the second printing.
Yeah. I hate to say this, but it's trendy.
No, it's super. I just was in a meeting this morning where someone told me that the gluten-free like as a buzzword, as an interest in the general public, has gone up another 30% from 2012, yeah. where it was already, you know, made such a huge impact on the industry.
In some ways, it's scary because people aren't feeling good, and there's lots of reasons why they're not feeling good, and I think food has a big part of it. But more people are discovering when they eliminate wheat, when they eliminate gluten, they feel better. What's going on with our food supply is scary. And what's
yeah.
going on with wheat, which was supposedly the staff of life.
Right, right.
And I support it. Most of the recipes at Responsible Eating and Living are gluten-free, and I'm having a lot of fun with that, working with different flours that I had never worked with in my life, all these bean flours and nut flours and other grain flours. It's just opening my world. I love it.
Yeah, it's really fun. And, you know, Ayurveda's main, like at the core of Ayurvedic medicine is the ability to digest your foods completely. That if you have a healthy, vital, vibrant digestive system, the rest of your tissues and mm-hmm. organs mm-hmm. and other bodily systems are going to respond to that in a positive, more healthy way. And so because that's another, you know, that's also part of my thinking of making the book predominantly gluten-free, although there are people in the world, plenty of people, who can process gluten just fine. And so I'm not saying, like, gluten is bad for us. It just really depends on can your digestive system mm-hmm. process it enough to create a sense of vitality within you. And you know, everyone's different.
You know, it's about balance, and you know that. Balance, key word.
Yeah.
So many foods on grocery store shelves in the United States, in the Western world, and more in other countries has wheat in it. And there's a lot of reasons behind it, and some of it is because of corporate power and control of what's going on. We need balance. We need more recipes. We need more food without wheat.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, just as another, I mean, for me it was like an added bonus of the book when mm-hmm. I was writing it to include that. So thanks for noticing.
I pay attention. Okay, now I want to talk about a few recipes in here. So I
okay.
am a big fan of tea and hot beverages. I
yes.
live in New York. It gets cold.
Yes.
And there's one of my favorite things to do is to just sit and have a warm, hot, or hot beverage. And you've got some great recipes in here. I'm a big fan of chai, and you've got a recipe for chai here. That looks great.
Yeah.
And then you have a few others that, and they all seem to have a little bit of ginger in it. Can you talk about ginger from an Ayurvedic point of view?
Yeah. I love ginger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ginger is almost tridoshic. And when I say tridoshic, I mean it's an herb that is going to typically balance anybody. So there's three doshas, three basic Ayurvedic elements in Ayurvedic medicine, vata, pitta, and kapha. And ginger is going to balance all three of them for the most part. Sometimes ginger, if it's too hot, like mm-hmm. if there's too much of it that is really hot, like especially in the form of dried ginger, it can be a little too pungent maybe for the vata dosha or a little too heating for the pitta dosha. So they have to pay attention to how much they take of ginger and in what forms. But for the most part, ginger is an anti-inflammatory, circulatory herb. So it's going to increase and increase blood flow, making blood flow stronger and more vital. And it's also going to help with any sort of itis, you know, in Western mm-hmm. medicine. So as an anti-inflammatory food. So I really love to just add it for that little bit of kick that it gives, both in flavor but also in energy.
Mm-hmm.
Because another thing that I don't focus on in my book very much at all is forms of caffeine. And I love food so much. I'm such a foodie, and yet I call myself a health-conscious foodie because I just love to feel good when I eat and feel good all the time.
Shouldn't we all want that?
I think that everyone's so different. Like, I meet people who, they have such strong digestive systems. They eat whatever they want, and they never have problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand their perspective of, why should I try to eat better? I like what I'm eating, and I'm not having any issues. And
can I interject something there?
Yes.
I know that there's a lot of different people out there. There are a handful of people, not many, but a few people that live a very long life, and they're doing everything that we think is wrong, and
right.
That's a mystery. Okay, let's not talk about them. But I think a lot of people who are not eating well have lost their vitality. Their body's just given up. And they may not notice that the food is causing any problem, but at some point they're going to fall apart and fall apart badly. That's just my opinion.
Right.
But anyway, continue.
No, I agree with you, and I see that too. But it's, you know, sometimes it's just they've got to hit 40 or 50 before that starts to happen, and the symptoms have to be uncomfortable enough for them to want
mm-hmm.
to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, going back to ginger, that ginger has this sort of warm, invigorating action in the body, it gives us energy. So that's why I've included it in a lot of these drinks, especially if they're a warm drink to be taken in the morning. And when it's a drink to be taken at night, I mean, ginger is not going to keep you awake, but it's going to improve blood circulation, which studies have shown actually help us relax more when we do start to unwind at the end of the day.
It's a really powerful food because of all of those properties. It can energize you, make you feel really warm inside, and that warmth can give you energy, or that warmth can actually relax you and make you feel cozy when it's time to go to sleep.
Yeah, and usually it's showing you exactly what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not some arbitrary, like, sometimes I feel this way and sometimes I feel this way. It's like your body is responding to it naturally and showing you, like, actually, you could really relax right now. That would be in alignment with what you're needing. Or, wow, this gave you energy. You were ready for it, and here it is. It's also a great digestive herb. So I've included it in a lot of my recipes because as a tridoshic digestive, carminative, and just digestive tonifier, it's a good one to think about when we're putting into wanting to make hot drinks or all different kinds of food, really.
There's a lot of lovely recipes in here, and what I like is some of them are almost conventional, but you add different spices to them that make them new, almost.
Yeah.
We just have a few seconds left, really. Where can people find you on the Internet?
They can find me at Talias Kitchen, Talyas Kitchen.com, and my book is available everywhere books are sold.
That sounds pretty good. Well, all the best with that. I think it's a really lovely book. Thank you for writing it.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
I think I'm going to go and have a cup of ginger turmeric tea now.
Nice.
Okay, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you can visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and have a delicious week.